The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We're joined now by one of the pioneers of the podcasting phenomenon, which is becoming so popular, Mark Maron, the comedian who is playing in Vicar Street tomorrow evening. We'll give you details about that in a little while. He's also an actor, and he's going to be in the Joker movie later this year. And he's the host of the WTF podcast with Mark Maron as well. Mark, thank you very much for joining us here.
Thanks for having me. Thank you for having me. I need to clear up what's happening. The Joker movie, for some reason, it seems like I'm the third on the bill. But I literally have like one scene.
It must be a very important scene, so is it?
It is pivotal. Without my character... I don't know. The entire end of the movie hinges on my inability to hold my ground in a way.
Okay, that's not a spoiler alert here.
No.
I saw the promo for it with Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah. Pretty spectacular visually.
I think
so. Have you seen much of the movie yourself?
No, I just know that he shot it in a very gritty way and made it sort of like those kind of 70s New York movies that the angle is really... Yeah, this is an origin story. It's pre-Batman, and it's really a kind of a psychological character study of a mentally ill dude, who becomes a Joker. I don't think I'm spoiling anything. You know the Joker's mentally ill, right? He's got problems.
And you appear in your key scene with one of the great actors of all time, don't you?
Yes, Robert De Niro.
And you acted him off the screen, I'd imagine, did you?
Well, there was a moment there where, I was excited. I'm not that experienced an actor. And I got there. He's a very nice guy, very soft-spoken, not a big talker, but there, decent dude. It was a rough day. It was the day that he had been sent a bomb. So among all the other people that were sent bombs by that lunatic Trump-loving guy. So it was that morning that it happened. And he was not that shook up about it because one was sent to several other fairly important people. He thought he was in pretty good company, so he had a good sense of humor about it. But when I started the scene with him, it was the first take, and I was all amped up, and I just saw him after the director said cut. I saw De Niro kind of walk over to the director and then walk back to his place, and the director comes over to me, and he's like, you're coming in a little hot. You're a little worked up. Remember... he's your boss in this scene. I'm like, okay, good note, okay.
It must have been intimidating, though. I mean, you're a relative newcomer to acting. You're a stand-up comedian. You've done sketches. We'll get to the podcast in a while. And you would be known to many people who know the Netflix Glow series.
Yeah.
Because you're a key player in that. But as somebody who's relatively new to acting, what's it like suddenly being in a scene with one of the greatest actors of all time?
Well, it's weird. Over time... I did my own series for 4 years that I think you can get on Netflix. I know that at least in the UK, they can't get the fourth season. I don't know what to do about it. I think you could probably get at least 3 seasons of Maron here. And we just finished the third season of Glow. But it seems that because of the podcast and because of my many interactions with legendary people that, I know pretty well that they're actually humans. They're not... super beings, and a lot of times the pedestal that I have people up on kind of dissolves pretty quickly when you meet them. And I know that from doing my podcast. So I was intimidated, but also really what I was thinking about is they hired me for a reason. It's probably because something about me is right for this. So how do I just do that without being freaked out? And it's pretty easy once you get going with something, because it was a moving scene. We were walking, we were talking, I knew my line. So I wasn't that freaked out, I wasn't that nervous.
And I've noticed that in a lot of the interviews that you do in the podcast, and I've been listening recently to the likes of Alison Janney, Rob Lowe, John Cleese, various others. So you're picking up acting tips all the time off them anyway.
I started
doing
that.
They're giving you tutorials practically during the podcast.
Well, that's what I'm looking for. I didn't do much acting classes. I did in college and some here and there, but I actually didn't have many actors on for the first couple of years of the podcast, but now I'm always having them on so I can ask them questions. I've had some great actors give me some great advice. Vincent D'Onofrio was on Monday, and he gave me some pointers. Yeah, I'm always looking for tips.
Of course, you do stand up though. So stand up like doing a one man show anyway. In some respects, is it sort of an act of theater, or is it something different?
For me, it's something different. I like to be pretty present, pretty engaged. I like to improvise as much as possible. I like to have a pretty direct connection with the audience. I find that if I if I'm not thinking, like I can't really autopilot that way, and I don't like comics that do. It feels to me that even the best comics, I've seen some audiences react in a not so satisfied way if they feel like the guy is just rolling through material. I mean, they can get laughs and stuff, but for some reason it seems to be I need a deeper connection. Maybe it was because I was my parents were not great. I don't know, but I'm looking for something genuine, and I need to have it. If it doesn't happen, I'll make it happen.
I heard you reference Irish comics recently on your podcast. Tommy Tiernan, for example, you're a fan of.
Yeah. Well, Tommy, yeah, I've not talked to him. I've talked to Dylan Moran, and talked to O'Dowd.
Chris O'Dowd,
who's not really a stand-up. But there is the long-form comedy is sort of what I do. I do it differently. I'm not fundamentally a storyteller, I think, but Tiernan's very good at that. And I think a lot of the Irish guys, you know, and women, I imagine, I don't know a lot of them, but there is a long-form tradition here, which I like.
So when people go and see you in Vicar Street tomorrow night, what do they get?
Oh, they're going to get a lot. There's some pretty gnarly, over-the-top political satire that they'll completely appreciate. You know, I talk about God, drugs, tea, relationships. I talk about my own insanity, compulsiveness. I talk about vitamins. I run the gamut, but I think most things are covered.
You're very open about dealing with addiction in the podcast, well, your own previous experiences.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Tell us a little, for those who aren't familiar with the WTF series of podcasts, or with you, tell us a little bit about what you still deal with, even though, I think, is it 19 years now?
I'm coming up on 20 years, no drugs, no booze, but, you know, I'm still nuts. I mean, you know, I find that it's going to come out somewhere else. I'm fortunate that I don't have a gambling problem. You know, I'm fortunate that I'm pretty settled with the women thing, you know, but food is a little rough. Like I got over to the hotel and they put an entire tray of like pastries, like tea time pastries. And it was just sort of like, it was like the devil in the form of cakes, because I'll just sit there and eat them all myself in a hotel room. I got to be careful, man. Just because like anything can make you feel bad if you do too much of it. But I have been sort of strung out on tea lately, and it kind of started, you know, kind of small. Like I started with PG tips, kind of street level stuff, you know, and I know Barry's is better. I know that there's Lyons is better.
You know Ireland if you know that Barry's tea, which is from Cork, is the tea to drink.
Of course. I'm drinking Bewley's right now. I had to go over there to get it because now, like, I started with the bags and then it just got out of hand, man. I'm traveling with two or three bags of loose tea. I got my own strainer. If I'm not in Europe, I bring my own water kettle. It's crazy.
Okay, because that's a big issue for a lot of people from Ireland going to the States, that you can't make a cup of tea when you're staying in a hotel.
You got to buy a kettle.
Yeah.
No, I had a whole problem in the States with that. I get very mad at hotels that don't have a water kettle available. And, like, I don't know why. You can buy a little one that kind of folds up, and I travel with it because I'm like, now I'm completely addicted to tea, and I like traveling with bags of weed, though it's tea now. So I've got several Ziploc bags full of loose tea. I'm a big fan of Assam, and I know the Irish are as well. It's the basis of Irish breakfast tea. That stuff gets me going. See, take it from an addict who, like, I used to drink coffee, but I quit because, you know, it was upsetting my girlfriend, because you see my personality, right? If you caffeinate this, looks a little like emotional abuse, all right? It's very tricky, very fine line between me just, you know, being me, and then you put a little caffeine, and all of a sudden she's crying, and I'm like, I'm just talking. I'm not yelling. But so I try to do tea, and now I figured out a way to get exactly what I need. Like, I've got three or four different kinds I go to. I've got the Assam for when I really want to get out there. I've got a sort of an English breakfast for when I just want to ease into it. And I've got a couple other ones. Earl Grey, they make this. There's a place in the States that makes an Earl Grey creme that's got a little.
When you get into something, you clearly get into something.
You know, whether
you?
It's tea or boots. You know, I'm buying boots all the time, polishing boots. Yeah, I'm a very compulsive person because I don't have a spiritual life. Do you see? If you're compulsive enough, you don't necessarily need God. You know, you just keep busy, and the only time it's delicate is that last half hour, you know, before bed. But you know what to do then.
I imagine for a lot of people is that they really became familiar with you when one of your big coups for the podcast was getting President Barack Obama, as the sitting president, I think, wasn't he at the time, to go to your garage.
Yeah, last term.
How did you manage to do that?
Well, you know, what happened was some people on his staff were fans of the show, and it was his last term, and yeah, he was sort of like, kind of looking for a little traction, a little relevance. It's a tough term for a second term president because, you know, he didn't have control of the Congress and, you know, he could have kind of drifted into the background. But I guess some people on his staff thought it would be a good thing for him to do the show because of the what it is and the profile of it. And we were in conversation with them over a year. They check in every couple months, say, we're still thinking about it. And then eventually they're like, he wants to do it. So I thought, like, well, what do I got to travel to the White House? Because I have equipment I travel with. And they were like, no, he wants to come to the garage. And I thought, that's ridiculous. He's going to come to my dumb little house. I live in a 2-bedroom house. I used to. And I had this old garage. And it's a big deal. It's not just a casual drop by.
Was this in Los Angeles?
Or? Yeah. He doesn't drive up in a rented Toyota. You know, they got to close down the neighborhood.
The whole street. I'm sure your neighbors loved you for this, did they?
No. They're a little upset, but I think the city was happy because they flew him from the west side over near where I live in the helicopter in the Air Force 2 or whatever it is. But my neighbor next door, Dennis, was thrilled because I had to ask him if they could put snipers on his roof. And, you know, he's retired and that was very exciting for him. So it made his year. It's a memorable experience. They gave him a little badge.
And did he live up to your expectations?
Sure. Yeah.
In more ways.
Well, you know, he's a very grounded dude, a very earnest guy, very, kind of personable, seemed pretty honest. I don't really do a political show, though I have drifted into some political talk, not with guests so much. But, we have a monster running our country that's determined to undermine the entire system and make it somewhat of some kind of weird McDonald's-style authoritarianism. So it's troublesome. And I don't know, but, Obama, despite what anyone may think of him policy-wise, was a pretty, thoughtful guy. He was a smart guy. His heart was in the right place. And he was very, he put me at ease very quickly, and he's funny.
I deliberately didn't get to Trump until now because many of my listeners accuse me of what some of them say is Trump derangement syndrome, always giving out about how an appalling individual he is, how damaging he is to American politics.
Well, you're right. To the world. Let's not make it too insulated. The ripple effect of that person, who is morally and he's a pretty reprehensible guy. And for some reason, there's a lot of people who want to accuse people who are a little left of having Trump derangement syndrome. But for whatever reason you may like him, even if you landed from another planet and watched Trump for 5 minutes, not knowing who he was, you would say, what's wrong with this guy? This guy's a lying, morally bankrupt person. And then that person would say, what does he do? And you'd say, he's the president. And they'd be like, oh my God, I'm going back to my planet.
And I remember recently you had some guy, I can't remember which guest was on, but you actually had a really interesting discussion about how dumb many of the American people are now, that you have a problem that he appeals to a certain dumbness in American society. Now, you could say that's elitist, I'm sure people would say it, but how much of an issue is this at present that the American people are not particularly well informed and almost
they
revel in that, in their dumbness?
They're shamelessly ignorant. And it's like, I guess dumb, I have to sort of evolve my perception of that. It just turns out the brain is a very malleable thing. And that, because of the fragmentation of information, if you choose and cherry pick the information you get and decide that it's truth, not unlike any belief system, you'll get locked into that. So it kind of feeds on a certain fear and anger about, things that aren't necessarily true or as bad. I mean, it's pretty undeniable that there's a climate problem. And to sort of like be, shamelessly against the idea that human beings have something to do with it does imply ignorance at best, stupidity at worst, and then to defend it and then to create policy around the fact that you don't believe it and to continue to support things that will cause more seems a little antithetical. I think there's a weird mixture of anger kind of misguided principle and just like hopeless nihilism that people are so bitter and so without hope and so disgruntled and disenchanted with the idea that government does anything good that they just want to see it all burn. And that's, not to mention the evangelical Christian faction within the government who I think wants to, deregulate, create policy to accelerate the prophecy. The quicker the world burns, the quicker we get Jesus back.
That's not a very optimistic point on which to end this interview. So I'm going to.
It's going to be funny. It's going to be hilarious.
There's one other thing I want to probably ask you about, though, is because, as I mentioned at the outset, the whole thing with podcasting is becoming more of a phenomenon at the moment. You do lengthy interviews. You get into. What is it you think that people like about podcasts that they weren't getting from other media?
Well, I think that on a basic level, the accessibility of them and the ability to listen when you want and to what you want, and God knows there's thousands of them out there. But you can do whatever you want with it. So I don't know if it's easy to lump all podcasts together because there's all different kinds. There's comedy. There's news. There's a series about murders. The list goes on forever, and some of them are completely unknown and will remain so. But for me, I think the long form conversation in general is something that is lacking in everyday life. There was a time before technology, before, not only do people not call people, they don't email anymore, they just text. And that's the preferable way to communicate with people. And that's pretty limited and kind of sad. And I think that one of the reasons my podcast resonates is because people long for a long-form conversation. People used to like to talk to people. I mean, I used to spend an hour or so with a friend and just sit around, catch up, talk about things that we're thinking about, life. And I think we're all able to shoulder the burden of others, and it's something that humans are sort of designed to do, and it's what makes community and human interaction, good for the soul. And I think it's lacking. So when people kind of listen in to the conversations I'm having, I think it fills something in them. It eases the loneliness and makes them feel part of a kind of an intimate conversation.
Well, I've enjoyed the conversation with you. I could talk for much longer, but unfortunately, I am told that I'm out of time. Is your performance in Vicar Street tomorrow night your first time playing in Ireland?
No, it's my, I think it's my third time at Vicar Street. And years ago, I did the Kilkenny Fest a couple of times. I've been here, and it's gotten progressively better. I've always loved this country, and I mean that seriously, to the point where I thought, like, maybe I have some Irish roots, but I don't, so I can't just move here, though I was thinking about it. I think if you switch two letters in my name, maybe I can pull it off. My name's Maron. I think if it was Moran, I could fake it. But no, I'm just an Eastern European Jew with a very strong attraction to Ireland.
Mark Maron, it's been great meeting you. Thanks very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.